It's Tuesday, the 2nd of February, 2016. Happy birthday to Sean Elliott. To the Red Rock Fantasy Basketball Monster Podcast, brought to you by moneyball.com.au and Trobot. My name is Josh Lloyd, and if you want to be a sponsor of the podcast like Trobot, all you need to do is leave a review on iTunes and you can sponsor the podcast for just one episode. We didn't reach the 500 reviews yesterday. Still got a stack coming in, but you still got a chance to enter into the contest to win yourself an NBA jersey. If you are the 500th iTunes review, you will win an NBA jersey. The person who won the 400th one hasn't even responded to me. Ron120932, send me an email. You've got, I'm going to give you to the end of the week. And if you don't reply to me, the person who was the 401st person is going to get the jersey. So Ron, reach out to me and so we can organize this jersey. And don't forget, we're not far away from getting to number 500. Go ahead, everyone, enter this contest. And if we should get to 500 pretty really quickly. We're almost there. And I will give out another NBA jersey. All right, we have got a fair bit to get into. Before we get into that, though, just one thing I want to mention that I'm going to start doing. So as I said on yesterday's podcast, I was talking about the Facebook page, and I think it's a great area to invoke group discussion. And Twitter's great, one-on-one, quick messages, that sort of thing. But Facebook's a great way to invoke group discussions. Like someone can put up a comment, I thought this, and then it's much easier for other people to chime in. So I want you guys to go ahead and look, like the Facebook page, which is facebook.com/redrockbasketball, comment on the post and try and get some discussion happening. The other thing I'm going to do is each day, I'm going to have a daily contest on Facebook and a separate one on Instagram. Today's one, I did a combined one, and it was pretty straightforward. It was, how many points do you think Kawhi Leonard is going to score today? No one got it right, so no one gets a shout out on the show. But I'll do something like that each day. There'll be a different one for Facebook, a different one for Instagram, and just to get people engaged in the show and getting some more interaction happening on both of those pages, which were a lot quieter compared to the Twitter page. So each day you'll see a contest go out there. It'll be, how many blocks and steals do you think this player will have? How many free throws do you think this player will hit? All those sort of things. We'll do one on Instagram, one on Facebook each day. And get involved, like him, and then we'll discuss it on the podcast the next day. Not one person predicted that Kawhi Leonard would have 10 points, shockingly enough, especially when he had 8 at the half, and some trickster decided they were going to put their guess in at halftime, and went from 19 points after he had 8 at half. Didn't quite work out that way. So I know when the game starts, don't put your little bids in, or don't put your little guesses in after the game, or after halftime. I did see someone do that, but I think it's a little bit of fun. We had a lot of people interacting today, and I just decided to do it about half an hour before games tip. So I reckon we can get a lot of people interacting in those things. It's fun. It takes 2 seconds to have a guess, and it really stimulates conversation. I'm pretty excited about doing it. We'll see how it pans out. Now, no more fluffing around.
Let's get to it.
Yes. Now, actually, before we get into that, some of you may be wondering, especially you people watching the video, I'm sure the people on audio don't really give a shit what jersey I'm wearing today. The people in the video might be wondering, what's that? What are you doing? What are you wearing? Well, I'll show you. There you go. I am wearing the LeBron James High School St. Mary's jersey, which I got today. So I'm pretty happy with that one. It looks not too bad. So that's the jersey for today. I'm doing some work on the I'm gonna call it a set, but it's not really a set. It's a blank wall at the moment. I'm doing something to spice up the background here, make it a little bit more, pleasing to the eye. We'll see how that pans out in the next week or so. Got a minor bit of construction to do, a few things to sort out, and then we'll get a bit of set decoration happening here. Now, we can get stuck into the actual action. The monstrous line of the night.
My name is Jeff.
His name was Jeff, and his name still is Jeff, and it is Jeff Teague of the Atlanta Hawks. Going from somebody who was almost trash about a week and a half ago, Teague has stepped it up dramatically lately. He only played 28 minutes in the Hawks' big win over the Mavericks, 32 points on 12 of 15 shooting. He hit 5 triples, had 5 rebounds, 8 assists and a steal, and hit all 3 of his free throws. It's fair to say he was terrible for a big stretch of time. He has turned that around dramatically. He is, over his last 4 games, he's averaging 21 points a game. 5 assists, 1.5 steals, 2.3 triples. The assists never really dropped off for him. It was the scoring that was way down. It was his minutes that were way down as well. But he is back into that top 50 realm. He's a top 50 player inside the last 2 weeks. The field goal percentage, which is one of his big strengths as a point guard, is sort of returning to normal over the last month or so, back up to 45 over the last month, which is a big improvement from where it was earlier in the season. Still holding Dennis Schroeder, definitely, until the trade deadline to see if anything happens. But if none of these guys are moved, Schroeder or Teague are moved, then Schroeder's done. You can forget about him in standard leagues unless an injury occurs. Obviously, I'm definitely not holding him in a standard format if no trade goes down. Look, he was okay today, Schroeder, but if Teague's going to still be there, they're going to attempt to give Teague 27 to 30 minutes a night, the way it seems now. Now, Teague said that he was playing terribly. He admitted he was playing poorly, but most of that, he said, was stemming from an ankle injury. And you sort of have to believe him because the last week or so, last 2 weeks, he's been fantastic and he's been back to all-star Jeff Teague form. So maybe there was that ankle injury that was really bothering him. It all checks out with the way that he's playing at the moment. Anyway, the young gun of the night and the waiver wire line of the night is the same person. And I am disturbed that this guy qualifies as the waiver wire line of the night. He is owned in only 44% of leagues. And what that means to me is that not everybody in the world that plays fantasy basketball listens to this podcast. I know, I'm shocked as well. They all should be, yeah? But Nikola Jokic is owned in only 44% of leagues. Why? He played 30 minutes, 27 and 14, 4 assists, a block, a 3, 12 of 18 from the field. He has to be owned everywhere. He's had to be owned everywhere for about the last, I don't even know the last time I spoke, man, 2 or 3 weeks ago, when I was, you know, adamant that even in 20 minutes, he was a must-own player. He's a top 30 guy in the last 2 weeks in 24 minutes a game. He does bits of everything. He's, you know, almost not quite a triple one guy, but he's getting stacks of steals, blocking shots, half a three, points, rebounds, big percentages. He's been absolutely incredible as a rookie this year. He is a storming home, really demanding these minutes of Mike Malone. And Malone has loved him for all season. I said this plenty of times. Malone talks about how much he loves this guy, but then would restrict him very often early on. And wouldn't play him, you know, big minutes and restrict him to 19 minutes and 18 minutes and go, why talk about this guy? Why talk him up? And then never play him. Didn't make a huge amount of sense to me, but he's being absolutely unleashed at the moment. He is dominating and he has to be owned in every league. Like every single league, he is playing that well. We're talking about a guy who was a top 50 player over the last month in 22 minutes. And if he starts getting 30 minutes a game regularly, it is going to be on. We are talking about I'm not going to say an elite talent, but a guy who knows what he's doing on the court, that's for sure, and can contribute in so many different areas and is turning into an absolute fantasy basketball monster. An animal, in fact. The dud of the night goes to Darren Williams. 8 minutes for Darren. 1 steal. Missed all 5 of his field goal attempts and suffered a hip injury, which Rick Carlisle is quite concerned about. That does not sound good from a guy who is a notoriously slow healer as it is. What do you do with Darren? What I'm doing is if I've got a room, I'm picking up JJ Barea. It's because when Williams was out earlier this season, Barea was putting up great numbers. Now, it's not necessarily I'm dropping Williams. I want to see what comes out and what they say about the hip. But if they say Williams is out for 2-3 weeks with a hip injury, I don't really think you need to hold him. He's not that good. He's been a pretty decent value play all season, but he's not someone that you need to retain a roster spot with for 3 to 4 weeks if there happens to be a really severe injury happening. JJ Barea is a guy that I've added in a few leagues just to see what happens. It's just maybe Williams is out, maybe Barea gets 2 or 3 starts, and I'll use him, and then he can go kick the curb as well, and he can be done. I guess it depends on your team as well. If you're looking, as I always say, if you're up the top of the standings, you don't want to sacrifice long-term value for maybe what could amount to 2 or 3 games of Barea. If you're in the playoff hunt, if there's a guy that is sitting there, you need to rotate in the hot guys, the opportunity guys, the value players, the guys who are getting a temporary spike in value, like a Barea. Hey, maybe it works. Maybe it works. Much like the Bobby Porter situation, which hasn't worked, he was worth a grab to say, hey, maybe this guy's going to give me 2 weeks' worth of great value that I'm going to use. Barea might do the same thing, but it's not most, unless we hear that Williams has got some sort of torn hip labrum and he's out for the season, Barea's not going to have long-term value. So that's something that you do need to sort of take into consideration. Your standings and your team are always really important in decisions that you make with building your squad. It's never as simple as As I know many people like to say this to me when asking me questions, it's never as simple as straight value in a vacuum. That doesn't exist in fantasy basketball. It just doesn't. Straight value in a vacuum doesn't exist. There's no such thing. It is context dependent on so many different things. And that's why I love fantasy basketball over other fantasy sports, because you can say, like in fantasy football, for example, you know, straight value. This guy give me 20 points, this guy will give me 25 points. That's straight value. It's not context dependent. It's not standings dependent. It's not team build dependent. And that's why I'm not a big fan of basketball points leagues. It's very context dependent. It's very much you need to think and analyze all of the variables. And hey, I think I'm waffling. I think you know my thoughts and all that sort of stuff. Maybe that stuff is still useful for you guys. But it's vitally important that you think about your team in that manner rather than just straight value, pure value in a vacuum, all that sort of stuff. The only time vacuuming should be existing in fantasy basketball is if you're doing it to your house. That's the only, that was a terrible joke. I apologize for that. I wish I had like a cricket chirping sound effect. I need to get one of those. Maybe a tumbleweed. I apologize. Anyway, stop making it worse, Josh. Let's get into the perfect DFS lineup from Monday. Unsurprisingly, Jeff Teague at point guard with 50. He had been playing pretty strongly. Didn't expect him to go off as off as this. And Michael Carter-Williams put up 45.5. That was probably his best game of the season as well. It's always really tough to predict someone who's going to put up their best game of the season. You can't really sort of see that coming most of the time. Carter-Williams was... just going to check one thing. I just completely forgot. Carter-Williams was taking on... They were taking on the Kings, weren't they? Yeah, yes, they were. So he had a pretty decent matchup, so that worked out in his favor. So he's always a nice punt option in that sort of scenario. He was decent. The shooting guards, Victor Oladipo, 39.1. Really hard to project that he was going to do something like that going up against the Spurs. He'd been depressed as well. Really only was a punt option. Jim Butler at 40.4. That's a solid return. But it goes to show that at his high salary, for him to be in a perfect lineup, he didn't need to achieve 5x value. Small forwards, Gordon Hayward, 50.9, a big night from him. That's great, even considering that Gobert and Favors were back in the lineup. He was tremendous. And Rudy Gay really took it. He was probably one of the best plays on the board, when DeMarcus Cousins was ruled out. He was fantastic, and he's been fantastic for a big stretch. Cousins in, Cousins out. He's been really, really good lately, Rudy Gay. 54.8. Miles Turner, with Yan Mahinmi out, continues to be great. 35 points for him. And LaMarcus Aldridge had probably one of his best nights of the season as well, going for 41.8 against that really poor Orlando front court. At center, my boy Nikola Jokic, 49.8, continues to crush value, and he just looks like an animal at the moment. I really, really love what he's doing. This is very similar to last season when I fell in love with another Nugget center, Yusuf Nurkic, who is now, he's going to find it hard to get this starting job back, to be honest. I don't think he does this season unless Jokic falls in a hole, but Jokic is the complete package at the moment. I still think Nurkic is a very, very impressive NBA player, but too many setbacks this year for him to get this job back off Jokic. That lineup would have totaled you 406.3 points, which is clearly a pretty big amount. Hopefully you guys were successful in your lineups today. We're going to get into the box score breakdown portion of the show in just a sec. But before we do that, just a quick word from one of our sponsors. All right, we're back now. And just a reminder, I'm also going to do the Dynasty Corner portion of the show, where I go through a couple of your guys' Dynasty questions and try and get some value for you guys in your Dynasty leagues. And I am going to be doing a Dynasty-specific podcast throughout the All-Star break with myself, Matt Smith, and Kyle McEwen, assuming we can make all our work schedules and time zones all make sense, which we should be able to do, but we're going to have a Dynasty-specific podcast happening across the All-Star break. The first game of the night was the Cleveland Cavaliers and the Indiana Pacers. The Cavs, another big victory. Big performances again from all of their big guys. And almost another night where the three big players, trying to avoid the big three after that Jeff Van Gundy rant the other day, they almost all got 20 points again. Kevin Love, 19-8, and a massive Richie Beno. 2 threes, 2 assists, 2 steals, 2 blocks. If you don't know what I'm talking about when I say Richie Beno, everyone in Australia, I'm sure you do. I put a link in the morning update on Basketball Monster yesterday, so if you're a subscriber, you can go and click on that. But it was a famous Australian cricket commentator who had a very distinct way of pronouncing two, and all the twos together makes me think Richie Beno. So there you go. He had a big Richie Beno there. Kyrie Irving really rounding into form now. 41 minutes. When the games are close, he's going to play big minutes. There's no restrictions on him in that sense. When the games are a blowout, they just rest him, as they're going to do to most other guys. But, he plays 41 minutes. He's been back a couple of weeks. There's no problem. 25-3-7 for Kyrie. Super efficiency. People forget how good this guy is. People forget that this guy was almost a top 10 player last season in fantasy leagues. He can still be had at a pretty decent discount. Maybe not quite so much after today, but he has been, yeah, he's going to ramp it up, and he's going to be probably not a top 10 guy, but most likely a top 30, top 25 player down the stretch here. LeBron, 24-12-6, two steals and a block. The thing blotting his performance with his shooting, 9 of 22 and then 6 of 10 from the free throw line, so not good percentages, and missed all 5 of his free throws as well. So that's obviously not an ideal scenario for any LeBron James owners in that sort of spot. J.R. Smith got hot, 19 points, including four triples. Not much else really for J.R. He was a pretty decent shooting from him, which is not, you know, that's, you don't expect that from him. That's not what you're counting on from J.R. Smith. But hey, you'll take it when it happens. A Tristan Thompson special here, 14 points, 12 rebounds, 7 of 7 from the field goal. I'm stumbling over my words here. 7 of 7 from the field for Tristan Thompson, and that's basically exactly what he does. With all the starters getting over 40 minutes, the bench, not much there. Dellavedova was reduced to 12 minutes. We only saw Timofey Mozgov for 12. We saw Iman Shumpert for 22 and Richard Jefferson from 9. So big minutes to all the starters. It was an overtime game, but the bench just didn't see anything. Dellavedova still provided you 4 assists and 2 steals, which is what he's been able to do pretty regularly, and that's where he does have value in a 12-team league. You don't like the fact that he missed all of his shots, didn't hit a 3, and you know, sort of sucked in the other areas, but 4 assists and 2 steals, it's still really nice. Speaking of really nice, George Hill was big again. 23-5-4, 4 triples, 2 steals. Probably as good as you can expect Hill to be, but the matchup against the Cavs with Irving, as good as Irving is offensively, defensively he does allow some the point guards to put up decent numbers. So we've always got to pay attention to that moving forward. Jordan Hill got another start with Jan Mahinmi out. 36 minutes, 17-6-4, a steal and a block. Great value. Really, really fantastic from Jordan Hill in these games that Mahinmi's been out. It's not going to be a long-term thing, but Mahinmi has been a notoriously slow healer from injury. He is relatively injury-prone, so Hill is a nice short-term guy to have a look at. Miles Turner's more than short-term, 14-10 with 4 blocks and a steal. He has to be owned everywhere as well. And Paul George, not his greatest showing. 3 of 15, 11-5-8. With 2 steals and a 3. So still helped. The 8 assists is good. The 5 rebounds and 2 steals is decent. But that's a really, really poor shooting percentage and not an optimal points outlook or output maybe. 41 minutes for Monte Ellis. He was also suboptimal with his shooting. 5 of 18. 14-2-5 with 2 steals. The bubble had to sort of burst with him at some point. It happened in this one. Lavoie Allen went 8-7 in 27 minutes with a couple of blocks. He is clearly just a deeper league player. And CJ Miles, his confidence is shot. He just can't get playing time. He can't do anything. 3 points in 11 minutes. You can drop him in 12s. You can drop him in probably even 14-team leagues at the moment, to be honest. He just cannot get anything happening whatsoever. The Detroit Pistons and the Brooklyn Nets. Andre Drummond stayed in the game, only took 3 free throw attempts, so it was a game. And this is where, in DFS, he becomes a great GPP option, but a really risky cash game option, I think. You can use him in a cash game because that's a great line, 27-18, a steal and a block. But then there's the chance that he completely just puts a hole in the ass of your cash game lineup. And you want guys with more consistency than what he provides. And that's why I have been steering clear of him recently. Now, not sure why the Nets didn't foul him at all. As much as I hate the tactic, hey, maybe the Nets are just like, we want to see decent basketball. Probably that's unlikely, but you know, teams are going to foul him, and it's going to happen, and he's going to be reduced in those sort of circumstances. That's what makes him a GPP-only option to me. Ersan Ilyasova was back, big minutes, 31 of them, 16-6, 2 steals and a block. I still like him as a borderline 12-team league guy. And remember we're talking about Brandon Jennings, his big night, 22 points, 22 minutes. He played 17 minutes and had 3 points. He also had 5 assists, but he's still, this is what he does. This is what he did last time. He had 20 points, and then he had 7 combined in the next 4. He's had 22, and he's had 3. This is what he does. This is why you shouldn't own him in 12-team leagues. I can't understand a situation where you would want to own Brandon Jennings in a 12-team league. Maybe a weekly changes league, but I don't even see the upside for him, to be honest. He is not taking Reggie Jackson's job. It's just not happening. Jackson went 19-3-6. With 3 triples. Stan Johnson only the 21 minutes with Ilyasova back. 13-1-1 with 3 triples and a steal. So still really nice production from him. He is really, really storming at the moment. I think he's going to be a really strong player. at the second half of the season. He's only really a sort of a stash candidate at the moment. He's still giving you value, but he's not giving you consistent high-level value or anything like that. KCP, 16 and 5 in 39 minutes. Not a great shooting night. And Marcus Morris, that should be his middle name. Not a great shooting night. 12 of 6 with 3 assists. Sorry, yeah, that's 12 and 6 with 3 assists. That's right. 32 minutes on 4 of 11 shooting. Not much else on the bench for the Nets. Brook Lopez, a big, big night. 27 and 5. 2 assists, 1 steal, 2 blocks. Superb shooting. 13 of 19. He is really, really good. And the Shane Larkin, Donald Sloan, what do I do with these guys situation, still there. Larkin played less minutes than Sloan, which to me is ridiculous. Like, Shane Larkin, for as bad as you might think he is, and he's pretty bad, Donald Sloan is multitudes worse. Now, Larkin played 22 minutes here and was actually really good. 8, 6, and 14 with a steal. Not saying that you have to own him. You don't have to own Shane Larkin. You don't have to own Donald Sloan either. But Larkin, to me, has a much bigger upside than what Sloan does. The minutes are getting split. Larkin should be starting over Sloan. I don't really care what they say. He should be starting. He should be playing 30 minutes. He should be developing something with these guys and trying to do something. This is what he can do. Sloan, I don't know. He just doesn't work for me at all. Both of them are probably not guys that you want to own in most standard formats, but Larkin does have the higher upside to me if he happens to get the run. We saw earlier in the season, as a backup, he was a top 100 player before he got concussed from just doing little bits of everything. Steals, some assists, some rebounds, some decent scoring, hitting some threes. The 4 of 8 shooting is not going to happen every night, not going to happen most nights. But his line is not the 8 points, it's the 6 rebounds and 14 assists. And he can get you 2 or 3 steals on you know, most nights. I really like him, but he's just a watch for the moment. Andre Bargnani had 18 points in 24 minutes, 4 rebounds. You leave him for your deeper leagues. And Thad Young, really sort of struggling at the moment, 8 and 5 in 25 minutes. Not his, definitely not his finest stretch. He was much stronger to start the season. Everything has dropped off significantly now. He's outside the top 100 for the last month. He's a top 50 player for the season. His percentages have dropped. He's just, I don't know, there's just bits and pieces of his game that just aren't quite there. I still think he has to be owned. Some people are asking me, do I drop him? And in some cases, dropping Thad Young for Nikola Jokic is probably a move that I would make. Dependent on your team and all that sort of stuff. That's a move that I would most likely make. But he's not a guy that has to be dropped or has no place in standard leagues or anything along those lines. He is in a bit of a slump, and it's been lasting quite a bit of time, but the minutes aren't in any danger. The production's dropped marginally, but I think he'll be okay. I think that he'll get back to having some pretty nice numbers, similar to what we saw at the start of the season. Joe Johnson, not good. 3-3 and 5 in 25 minutes, while Wayne Ellington got big minutes again. 11 and 3 with 3 triples. That's sort of what he does. It's really only restricting him to deeper leagues and some DFS action with a very, very low salary. The Memphis Grizzlies and the New Orleans Pelicans. JJ Kelly tweeted out a ridiculous stat on Mike Conley. I think it was... Now, I don't have this in front of me. I should have. Since his return from injury, Conley has distributed 71 assists and 8 turnovers. That's pretty ludicrous. He was 17, 4, and 10 here. He had a triple one. He had 5 of 7 from the field. He hit all 6 free throws. I was saying that I think he's a really nice buy low option. It's probably sort of wearing off at the moment. That's a big, big night from him. And Jeff Green, again, he is in just a ridiculously red hot streak. Own him. Piss him off when it cools off. 24 and 7 with 3 triples on 8 of 13 shooting. Well, Zach Randolph bounced back with Matt Barnes out in this one. 33 minutes for Randolph, 22 and 12. Didn't have Barnes there to cut into any of his playing time. So as long as Barnes remains out, which might be a couple more, he's got a hamstring issue. Randolph is a nice plug and play, but he's not a must own, must hold for the rest of the season sort of player. Marc Gasol, 14, 3 and 7 with a couple of blocks. A decent night from him. Courtney Lee did pretty stock standard Courtney Lee performance, 7 points with a couple of blocks, and Tony Allen scored just 2 in his 32 minutes. On to the Pelicans. My boy Norris Cole played 23 minutes, sorry, didn't he? Played 38 minutes and he scored 23 points. 3 triples, 3 rebounds, 6 assists, and 1 steal on some pretty electric 9 of 15 shooting. I still do not buy that Norris Cole is a good player, but he probably should be owned in most standard formats. But if he's on a waiver wire, I'm definitely not rushing to go and grab him. Anthony Davis had 23 and 9, also a triple one, and hit 10 of his 20 shots from the field, so a decent night there. No Tyreek Evans again. The worry meter on Tyreek Evans is getting very, very high at the moment. I've had a lot of questions. Do I drop him? Do I drop him? He hasn't been ruled out of anything. He's just currently questionable. I think when he comes back, he's going to play limited minutes. I would find it very tough to drop him. I would need to know that Tyreek is going to be out for 3 weeks and I'm in a playoff battle, then I would drop him. He could play the next game and then you could be missing a really important piece. I know it could drag on like Derek Favors and he could be day-to-day for a month and miss every one of those games. But I'm getting a similar question with Brandon Knight. I'm not sure that they're guys that you... When you've got top 50 upside like that, I'm not sure that I'm all that keen on just dropping them without any concrete information. I'm pretty sure that if someone dropped Tyreek Evans in my league, I would go and pick him up for free. And that really helps my team if he comes through. And if it doesn't, I've wasted nothing. I wouldn't be that keen to do it. With Evans out, Bryce DeJean-Jones started. Only 24 minutes here, but not bad. 9-5, a triple, 2 steals. He's obviously going to benefit if Evans is out long term, but for now he's more of a deeper league ad player. Tony Douglas, 6 points with a couple of steals and a couple of threes in 12 minutes, and Alonzo G started again and played 25 minutes. Not his greatest performance, nor was it Ryan Anderson, who did feel the wrath of the Grizzlies. 9 points in 29 minutes, and he is prone to having those sort of performances. Omer Asik, no blocks, unsurprising. He's just not a blocks guy, despite his recent form. 6 points and 8 rebounds, and Drew Holiday got absolutely destroyed by this Grizzlies defense. 1 of 14 from the field is not a very good number. 4 points, 4 assists, 2 blocks out of the blue, but he will be better when he doesn't have to take on the Grizzlies, who despite their drop-off this season are still a really talented defensive unit, especially against power forwards and point guards. The Dallas Mavericks and the Atlanta Hawks. Dirk was back. He played 31 minutes, 18-3, and had a couple of steals. Not a great shooting night from Dirk, going 4 of 11, but you love the 10 of 11 from the free throw line. That's huge volume and huge percentage. Chandler Parsons was big as well, 19-11 in his 32 minutes. With Darren going down, we saw JJ Barea play 31 minutes, 15 points, 4 assists and 2 threes. This is what the sort of level of production he can give us. And Ray Felton's going to get a bump to 25 minutes for Fat Face Ray. 13 points, 2 assists, a steal, and a 3-pointer. I'm definitely adding Barea out of those two, but Felton does have 12-team appeal if Williams happens to be out for a long period of time. Salah Mejri was out of this game, so JaVale McGee got 10 minutes. Steal and a block in those 10 minutes, nothing too exciting. And Wes Matthews' horror run continues, 4 of 14 with 11 points and 3 triples in his 35 minutes. Zaza Pachulia, not a good shooting night. 1 of 4 from the field, 2 of 8 from the free throw line. Still grabbed you 13 rebounds, but definitely not his most ideal performance. From the Hawks, after I pronounced him dead yesterday, Kyle Korver is back. 28 minutes, 16, 2 and 3 with 4 triples and a block. I say he's back, but I don't really mean that he's back. I'm not going, oh my God, it's Kyle Korver, he's back. He's a top 50 guy. It's like when Danny Green has a big game and you go, ooh, Danny Green, he's back. Well, he's not. And I don't think Korver is either. He might be. He'll have a couple more of these games, but yeah, we've got 50 games of evidence to say he's not. One game to say, man, it's like the Lance Stevenson one. 50 games of shit, one game of good, doesn't equal good. Same with Korver. Yeah, 50 subpar games, one decent game, doesn't mean, ooh, you're back. I want to see a couple more of them before I say, ooh, he's suddenly reversed track overnight because he heard me say that he'd pronounce him done on a podcast. It just, yeah. Let's wait and see. Paul Millsap and Al Horford both struggled. 10-4-2 for Horford, 8-12 for Millsap. Still 2 blocks for Millsap and a block for Horford, so not terrible sort of nights. Well, Dennis Schroeder went 14-3-3 in his 16 minutes, but I did cover him earlier on. Kent Bazemore continues to regress to being Kent Bazemore. 4 points, 9 rebounds, 3 assists in 27 minutes, 2 of 10 from the field. I harped on this repeatedly at the start of the season. Kent Bazemore is not a good shooter. Kent Bazemore is not a good shooter when he was like going 48% from the field and hitting threes out of his ass and all that sort of stuff. He is sitting at 82% on his free throws for the season. He's at 68% from the line over the last 2 weeks. That is where his career numbers are, that 68 sort of percent. He's probably better than that, but he is really regressing to where he needs to be. His last 4 games have him ranked outside the top 320. His last month has him outside the top 160. He's still a top 70 guy on the season, but it's because he started off with some ridiculous hot streak, which was unable to be maintained. I am okay with dropping Kent Bazemore to get a hot free agent, Aaron Gordon, Nikola Jokic, Marcus Smart. I would be all over dropping Bazemore because I just don't believe that Bazemore, a guy that's been a journeyman on three teams, can all of a sudden become this red-hot, out-of-the-blue, unbelievable scorer, shooter, defender, passer, all that sort of stuff, which he was doing. And he did it for a pretty prolonged period of time. But it is catching up. Maybe it's a mini slump. Or maybe this is just who he is. I guess we'll wait and see, but he's definitely not on my must-hold list of players. The Washington Wizards and the Oklahoma City Thunder. Johnny Wall, 41 minutes, 17, 4, and 8, but the two steals, three blocks is obviously fantastic from him. Otto Porter did play, only played 21 minutes, so 13 points, a triple, and a steal. Obviously, the hip is still bothering him, but at least he got on the court. Brad Beal, 18 points in 26 minutes with three triples. Yeah, look, he keeps doing enough that you got to keep holding him, but the ceiling is not even close to being there. And Marcin Gortat, 17 and 6 in 25 minutes. Now, I know that Vivek was hounding me to give a rant on the Wizards and how they were running their rotations and why Gortat wasn't playing. And I agree. Why isn't Gortat playing? Why is he playing 25 minutes? It makes zero sense against a Thunder team who was running Ibaka and Adams out there together, and you don't put not only your best center, your only center out there. It just didn't make much sense. And it's not like you're running out a team and you know, I've got to play a center because the other team's going big, but my center's no good. Like, Gortat's good. He's probably better than Steven Adams. He's better than Enes Kanter. Yeah, play him. Why restrict his minutes? I always love when this sort of stuff happens and the team loses, and you know, because it's dumb. Play him his minutes. He's been restricted a lot lately. No real reason why. Play him. You just generally have to play your best players. And Gortat is clearly one of them. Jared Dudley remains starting, replacing Nene. So if Nene was added, he can be done. I thought that was maybe a matchup situation and that they'd go back big against a bigger Thunder team. That clearly didn't happen. Nene played 17 minutes for 5 points, while Jared Dudley played 31 and went 8, 4, and 6. Decent night from Dudley, but he's not a must-own 12-team league guy. And Garrett Temple played 37 and went 9, 3, and 2. He is not a must-own guy either, despite the massive amount of minutes. He just is not capable of putting up consistent top 100 value. On the Thunder, Russ Westbrook, another triple-double. 17, 13, 11. Nice shooting night as well, 8 of 13. While Serge Ibaka, after a string of poor games, bounced back. 19 and 10, two threes and two blocks. KD, 28, 9, and 4 with a couple of threes. That's pretty rock solid for him. It's not spectacular, but it's obviously pretty nice. And Dion Wade is really joining the club of doing the least with most. 37 minutes, 8, 6, and 3. Did have two triples, three steals, and a block, so helping in the peripheral areas, but cannot score at all, which I guess is fair enough when you're surrounded by Westbrook, Durant, and Ibaka. Campaign was back, so DJ Augustine was out of the rotation. Payne played 13 minutes, 8, 3, and 2 with a couple of steals, and a three-pointer. Good to see him back. And Enes Kanter couldn't replicate his recent run of form. 14 and 5 in 17 minutes for Enes. While Steve Adams played 31 and went 10 and 3. The next game up, the Orlando Magic and the San Antonio Spurs. Vic Oladipo, 19, 3 and 7. 5 steals, a three-pointer. Big night for him in 35 minutes. Now, they kept it sort of close, but not really. They ended up losing by 15. Lord Alfred Payton played 32 minutes, so that's a positive. He only went 3 of 12 from the field for 6 points. 5 rebounds, 8 assists, a steal, and a block is pretty decent. And there shouldn't be anyone that's any risk to taking his minutes away. Toby Harris, 11 and 4 in 25. Nick Vucevic, 20 and 10 with a steal and a block, continues to be a really, really good player for them. But Aaron Gordon, another big night. Career best rebounding with 16, 12 points, a block, 6 of 12 shooting. He has to be owned as well. And people are going to have hard decisions. Who do I add, Jokic or Gordon? Jokic is the number one. Gordon's the number two. And you really have to look. I say he's a must-own, and he should be. If your team is that strong, you might not have anyone to drop for him. So I say must-own. Like, a must-own means run to your waiver wire, see if he's there, push the add button, and then look at your roster and go, well, who do I drop? Who's the guy that I want to drop? Because in some cases, you might just have a powerhouse, and you don't have anyone you want to drop. And that can happen. But he's someone that you must look at. You have to go and see if he's available. And if you've got a piece of crap sitting around on your waiver or on your team, then he's got to be owned. I don't imagine he will last too much longer. On the wire, though, Mario Hezonja, not quite as successful as the last game, but minutes-wise it was. 29 minutes, 4 points, 2 rebounds, 1 assist, and 2 steals. And that limited Evan Fournier to 18 minutes. If Hazonia's going to get this extra run, it is going to affect Fournier moving forward. I still think you'd want to maybe hold Fournier in a 12-team league, but here's an example. If you own Fournier and Gordon's available, I'm dropping Fournier for Gordon because Fournier's role is a little bit less stable, and with Hazonia getting close to 30 minutes in the last two games, Fournier being reduced, it's not looking great, but it's Scott Skiles. Anything can happen. Anything can change, and that can happen with Aaron Gordon as well. I just do not see Channing Frye coming back in and playing his 14 minutes as a starter, which was one of the more pointless things of the entire season. On the Spurs, they had a pretty comfortable victory in the end. LaMarcus Aldridge, a season-high 28 points with 4 rebounds and a massive 5 blocks. Not much else. Kawhi Leonard, really not productive. 26 minutes, blowout, minutes limited. You know this is the Spurs situation. 10-5 for Kawhi. 2 triples, 1 steal, and 2 blocks meant he wasn't a total write-off. But for a guy that was red-hot, easy top 10 guy to start the season, Kawhi Leonard has dropped off significantly. And it's not necessarily his play. It's his minutes, and it's some of his play, but he is outside the top 25 over the last month. He's outside the top 50 over the last week. He's still ranked, this is how good his season's been, he's still the third ranked player over the course of the year. But recently he has dropped off. Maybe it's a buy low situation. And again, when I say buy low, you need to buy really low. You need to buy with the thought process that maybe he remains as a top 30 guy the rest of the way. I don't think that's going to happen, but that's the sort of thought process you have to have if approaching it as a buy low. If you're selling Kawhi, you don't sell him as a top 30 player. You sell him as a top 10 player. And that's the opposite of buying low, clearly. You need to pay attention to these things. Danny Green, 8-6 with a couple of triples. Leave him on the waiver wire. Still no Tim Duncan. Tony Parker, 3-3-6. Look, all these... Duncan is not a must-own anymore. Tony Parker probably is, but maybe not definite. There's other guys you might be able to stream through there. Manu had a nice run of 12-team league value. That's sort of done with his minutes being cut down. He was still good here, 13-2-2 with a couple of steals. And Patty Mills went 22-4-5 with 3 triples. And that is as probably one-off as it's going to be. He just won't do that for the foreseeable future. As much as I love Patty Mills, do not expect that as a regular thing moving forward. The Toronto Raptors and the Denver Nuggets. DeMar DeRozan, 24 points, 4 assists and a steal in only 28 minutes. The game was a blowout, not in the direction you would expect, though. The Nuggets with the big victory, so a lot of the Raptors players were spread all over the place. You can look at their box score, because you see Anthony Bennett played 8 minutes. DeLon Wright played 6 minutes. Lucas Nogueira played 14 minutes. The minutes were spread all over the place. Kyle Lowry stunk, 10-2-2 with 3 steals, and his percentages were woeful. It is what happens. James Johnson suffered a sprained ankle. He played 10 minutes. My boy Norman Powell got the second half start. Didn't do a huge amount and missed all 5 of his shots. 2 points and 2 rebounds with a steal and a block. Corey Joseph got 28 minutes with Johnson out. So he's probably going to be the likely beneficiary there. 7-2-2 with a couple of steals. But no one that really tickles my fancy too much for 12-team leagues. Terrence Ross also played 27 minutes and had 12-4. But it's just nothing all that exciting. Jonas Valanciunas played 19 minutes. Luis Scola played 17. The minutes were just spread. The game was over very, very quickly. The Nuggets, the surprising Nuggets. I've talked Nikola Jokic already. Will Barton had a bit of a bounce back. 20-7, 2 triples, 3 assists, and a block. It's going to happen for him, and he's going to have some duds mixed in. I'd much rather own Will Barton than Kent Bazemore at the moment, but his value has dropped from where it was earlier on. Ken Fareed at 24 minutes, 13-7, and Danilo Gallinari went 13-4-4 in his 29. Emmanuel Mudiay, minutes limited in this one, only 24. Not his greatest performance because Randy Foy got red hot. He went 16-5-3. He had 4 triples, 1 steal, 2 blocks. That's great if for some reason you thought, I'm going to go and pick up Randy Foy for this game. For what reason, I've got no idea. It's not something that's going to be a thing moving forward. Mudiay, everything that I've always said about him remains. Foy back to a bench role, and he's not going to get more minutes than Mudiay on most nights. Joffrey Lavernier returned. He played 3 minutes for 4 points, and Yusuf Nurkic 4-7 in his 15. There's a clear pecking order. Jokic, Nurkic, Lavernier, exactly the way it should be at the moment. Darrell Arthur had 0 points in his 18 minutes, and Gary Harris only got on the court for 20 minutes. That was a lot of foul trouble induced, and that could be part of the reason why Barton played that extra minutes. Harris had 9 points with 2 threes in his playing time. The Chicago Bulls and the Utah Jazz, an overtime game. The Jazz got the victory. Pau Gasol, he fouled out in 40 minutes, 19-8 with a steal and a block. Pretty nice numbers. And Jim Butler went 26-7-6. That's good from him as well. Taj Gibson was also productive. He's a must-own player. 7-11-4, one steal, three blocks. Let's go on to his backup, Bob Portis. What did he do? Well, you don't own him. You don't need to own him in 12-team leagues. 21 minutes for Portis, 8-5, nothing else. That's fine if you're in a 16-team league. Maybe in a 14-team league, in a 12-team league, there are going to be multitudes of guys that are better. And as I said, when the Nikola Mirotic news broke, add Portis if you can, if you've got an available roster spot, and see what happens. It might not work out. It may work out short term. It hasn't worked out. Forget about it. Just move on. Derrick Rose, 14-3-4 with a 1-1, and back to some poor Derrick Rose shooting. And Etuan Moore got another start at small forward. 27 minutes for Moore, 8-2 with two blocks. He has very minimal fantasy appeal. On the Jazz, Gordy Haywood, 27-12-7, a 3, a steal, a very big performance from him. Rudy Gobert went 16-12 in at 43 minutes, and Derek Favors is back, which apparently was caused by a mattress issue, is looks like it's all right. 38 minutes, 13-8, 4 blocks, really bad percentages from Favors. They will be better moving forward. He will be better. Maybe it's a nice buy low here. If someone looks at this and goes, oh, he's just not really blowing it up since returning, I think he's going to be a monster in the second half. Rod Hood, really, he's been fantastic. 19-5-3, 2 triples, scoring fantastically, hitting a lot of threes, getting some nice assist numbers. I think Rod Hood's going to be one hell of a player. And Raul Neto played 32 minutes, going 14-3-2. With 2 triples, he's probably a better player than Trey Burke at the moment, to be honest. But I don't think either of them are really guys that you need to be paying a huge amount of attention to in 12-team leagues. The last game of the night is the Milwaukee Bucks and the Sacramento Kings. Michael Carter-Williams, big night from him. A 1-1, 18-5-13 as well. Superb percentages. He's going to be up and down, we know that, but he's going to be more up than down. Well, that's the way it's been trending lately anyway. 35 minutes for Greg Monroe against a boogieless Kings lineup. 24-12 with a steal and a block in 35 minutes. And Jabari Parker was good as well. 16-7 with 2 steals. And those steal numbers that he gets are very underrated, and they form a key component of his fantasy value. There was no John Henson again, so we saw more Miles Plumlee, who played 13 minutes for 2 blocks. And Johnny O'Brien had 6 minutes for 0 stats. They can be left alone. Giannis Antetokounmpo, 17-5 with 2 steals, and Chris Middleton had 14 with 3 steals. Not lofty performances, but pretty decent, and they'd be, they'll bounce back. On the Kings, Rudy Gay, phenomenal. 32-9-6, 2 steals and a 3. Really awesome percentages. And Rajon Rondo played 35 minutes, 19-2-7, 3 steals, 4 triples. 4 triples from Rajon Rondo. You can count your lucky stars that you got that. You're not going to see that too often. You're not going to see 6 of 10 from the field, and you're not going to see 3 of 4 from the free throw line. This is like a fantasy. I know we're talking fantasy here, but this is like a fantasy Rajon Rondo line. He did have 6 turnovers. He is poor on defense, most definitely. But in terms of racking up stats, he's been fantastic this year. No Ben McLemore to go along with no DeMarcus Cousins. So Marco Bellinelli started, played 36 minutes, went 18-3-6 with 2 triples. Really nice Bellinelli game. It's not doing anything for me to go and add him in any places. Willie Cauley-Stein played 29 minutes, 4-10 with a couple of blocks. And Costa Kufos had 7-11 in 30 minutes. Kufos will be a decent add if Cousins is out another game, and Cauley-Stein is probably someone who should be owned in most 12-team leagues as it currently stands. All right, I am quickly running out of breath. I'm going to take a quick break, and then we're going to be back to talk DFS for Tuesday.
Cause I
we're back. Actually, before we get into DFS stuff, let's go to Dynasty Corner. So a couple of your questions regarding Dynasty League basketball. The first question comes from Studes, who's on Twitter at Grin Pow Dyer. Interesting name. He says, I was offered Mason Plumlee and Rudy Gay for my Jonas Valanciunas. I declined, but it was close. I'm not convinced on Plumlee producing long term. Okay, I probably need a bit more information to get too into that, but Gay is the best option there. To me, he's clearly the best option for this season. He's clearly the best option for next season. I love Jonas Valanciunas probably more than most people. I'm a big Jonas Valanciunas fan, but he's constantly hamstrung by inept coaching at times from Dwayne Casey. As good as Toronto is, they should be doing more with Valanciunas. Gay is the best player for the next two seasons. If you're in a situation where you're competing now, I would have taken Gay. Look, I'm not convinced with Plumlee in producing long-term either. But I do think Plumlee has value. He's shown, and this is something I like with players, when they can do something and add to their game. And Plumlee's added passing. He's added assists. He's adding set it up. That part of his game has improved significantly. He's evolving what he can do. And that gives me, you know, that's why I do like Aaron Gordon. I did not like Aaron Gordon at all coming into the league. I was like, this guy's going to be a bastard, useless. He can't do anything. But he worked at things that he was bad at. He worked at his free throws. He worked at his three-point shooting. He worked at his passing. He worked on just becoming more than an athletic phenomenon. And I really like that about players. And I think Plumlee doing that as well, working on things that he can do. He's worked on his free throws after a down year last year. They're back up to a really nice rate. I think they were like over 80% the last couple of weeks. His passing has been fantastic. He's doing a lot more moving, screening, defensive-wise. He's doing a lot more in that respect. If you're right down the bottom of the league and you're rebuilding, yes, Gay's value is going to expire a lot quicker than what Valanciunas's is. But a trade of getting Gay for Valanciunas this season is a pretty big upgrade, in my opinion. Plus, you're getting Plumlee. It depends who else you'd have to sort of drop in that deal. But I reckon, again, it always depends on the way my team looks. But I probably would have taken it, to be honest, Studes. The next question. James Gibson on Twitter at GibsterGib. A 20-team dynasty league. We're getting serious here with some deepness, depth. That's the right word. Rank these guys for the next 5 years. Nick Stauskas, Lance Stevenson, Kelly Oubre Jr., Joe Young, and Eddie Tavares. I'm going to take Tavares out of this because you know what I say, James and everyone else. What's the point of me ranking a shot-blocking center against a whole bunch of wings and point guards? If you need blocks, Tavares is going to be the best option. If you're just solely after blocks. If you don't need any blocks at all, he's way off the list. It's very, very dependent. The next 5 years, it's a big statement. I probably go Stevenson last. I think he's cooked. I would go Oubre 1. I would go Young 2. I would go Stauskas 3. And I'll go Stevenson 4. And Tavares just sits on his own because he's a completely different player. Now, Young is a little bit different to these other guys. And he could be a really good point guard. I think Oubre shows flashes. But if you're point guard desperate, which a lot of fantasy teams are, especially in a 20-team format, Young could edge him out as number one. I really, really like what Joe Young can do. I think he can be a really decent scorer as well. I would put him just behind Oubre, and depending on situation, I would put him marginally above Oubre. But that's a great question, James. Look, plenty of people would disagree with me on that one, I'm sure. Let me know what you think, but that's the way I see it. As for Tavares, he's like a less talented Rudy Gobert. He might not ever amount to anything, but he could be a John Henson role sort of player, a two or three block guy in 18, 19 minutes in a couple of seasons' time. But it just doesn't compare to these other guys because it's completely different sort of numbers. Cool. That's the that's Dynasty Corner done for today. Definitely going to be more Dynasty stuff moving forward in this podcast. If you guys contribute to it as well. We only had a couple of questions come in for Dynasty Corner today. The more Dynasty questions you ask, the more Dynasty stuff we'll cover. And definitely want your thoughts on what sort of topics to cover in the big Dynasty Only Roundtable podcast that we are going to have. The first game of the DFS slate is the Boston Celtics and the New York Knicks. The Celtics are favored by 2.5. The total is 207 points. Jose Calderon is questionable. He did practice, so he looks like he's going to get back on the court here. So that's going to limit our use of Langston Galloway. Jay Crowder is dealing with a couple of issues. A shin problem, which he says feels like a calf problem, which is definitely worrisome. That means we want to steer clear of Jay Crowder, but Evan Turner comes into play at 5,200. He's already averaging over 25 in his last five games, which at 5,200 puts him basically right on value. If Crowder's out and he gets to start, they potentially would go smart, but I doubt they would. They'd start Turner. He'd play 29 minutes. And I think that 30 points is the right spot for him in that sort of area. I think that he gets 29 to 30 points. And at 5,200, he becomes a really nice guy to look at. And even if Crowder does play, I think his minutes will be limited. He might play 25, 26 minutes. He's been a bit down in playing time lately anyway. He's averaging less than 30 over his last five for a guy who's been, yeah, obviously a much higher minutes guy recently. So it's a situation to have a look at, definitely. Isaiah Thomas at 7,800, one of the better high-priced point guards in the business. It doesn't matter if Calderon plays or he doesn't. The defense is lax there with the Knicks in the backcourt. Doesn't always show up in terms of fantasy value, but I think he's priced under 8,000, which I like. 40 points is what he put up in the last one. 35 to 40 is a pretty solid range for him. I think that he'll get really close to that number. So I do like Isaiah Thomas here. Marcus Smart's at 5,700. He's been really playing fantastically. He's averaging 29 across the last five. The matchup's not a worry. You worry that maybe he's a little bit inconsistent, but I think that he's a pretty solid play for both cash and GPP formats. As always, the front court options, whatever. Who knows what's going to happen. Kelly Olynyk, Amir Johnson, Jared Sullinger. Sullinger was bad in the last one, so that means he'll probably be good in this one. And I'm only half joking when I say that. Sullinger at 5,400, the price has come down. Johnson at 52, Olynyk at 5,000. If I'm taking any of them, I just probably spend them less money and take Olynyk and hope something comes of it. It's strictly a GPP situation. Robin Lopez has been criminally underused lately. He's averaging only 22 minutes across the last five. Don't understand it, because when he was playing, the Knicks looked a lot better and they'd play in big minutes and things would happen. Derek Fisher's decided to go away from things that work. Hey, it's Derek Fisher. I think he's going to be really low ownership. He's at 4,900, which is not a big salary. Yeah, I think he can, and it's against the Celtics front court, which is not good. In fact, it's poor in terms of its ability to restrict fantasy points. I think that Lopez definitely is worth a look, especially in a tournament where his ownership should be pretty low. I think he is someone that really deserves attention. If Calderon happens to be out, sorry to just transgress so quickly there, if Calderon happens to be out, Langston Galloway is a great option. He's a 28 average across the last three games. Other Knicks to have a look at, look, Mallow at 9,000 is a really nice high-priced option too, especially if Jay Crowder is out. That's a defensive wing stopper that is done, and he feels like, Mallow that is, feels like that there's 40 points in him relatively comfortably here. What do you do with
percentages?
He's at 6,700. Again, much like Robin Lopez, minutes have been restricted, but this is a fantastic matchup for him. I'm okay with getting him into a tournament. He's definitely in the mix there for me. You know, 30, 35 points should be seen as the sort of upper limit of what he can get you. And at 6,700, I think that returns pretty nice value. I also don't hate him in a cash game for his sort of underperforming as he has been. He hasn't had a massive stinker. His lowest score in his last five has been over 20 points, which is relatively promising, and this matchup is very favorable for him. Aaron Aflalo is only ever a tournament option. He's at 4,900. Don't really, especially with Avery Bradley going on him, do not love that spot for him at all. And as I said, Calderon, even if he plays, forget about it. He's Calderon. He's coming back from an injury, and he's going to have Avery Bradley or Marcus Smart guarding him. That does not equal a rosy picture for Jose. The Miami Heat and the Houston Rockets. The Rockets are favored by 4.5. The total here is 205 points. Dwight was complaining of a sore shoulder. He thinks he'll play. I think he'll play. He's saying it's been a bit sore. I imagine he'll be right to go. And Donatas Motiejunas has been recalled from the D League. I don't think he's going to have much of an impact on the rotation, but at least he did play in the D League. He's back playing now, so the injury is on its way back. Tyler Johnson is out for the next 2 months with a shoulder surgery, so obviously he can be dropped in most formats, and Hassan Whiteside is considered questionable. If Whiteside is out, we do have to consider Amari Stoudemire, who's averaging a ridiculous 25 points over the last three, dropped over 33 in his last game. There's a massive Rockets bump opportunity for Amari. He's at 4,200. I would love getting him into a lineup if Hassan Whiteside happens to be out. Hey, maybe this is the game that Amari goes terribly, but I reckon you'd have to give it a crack anyway. Goran Dragic at 5,400. Don't imagine his ownership's going to be very high. He was very low in the last game, but it was foul trouble. Only put up 18 points. There was a lot. It only limited him to 23 minutes. He's at 5,400. I've got relatively high confidence he can go for 25 or 26 here. A cash and a tournament, I think he's in a nice spot. And Luol Deng, who's been quietly putting up decent numbers, he gets the Rockets bump here as well. He's already averaging 27 points across the last three. You know, does he come in and have 28, 29, 30 point upside against the Rockets? I think that he does. As bad as he can be, he's been consistently good over the last 4 to 5 games. Plus, he gets a perfect matchup. Patrick Beverley's been playing solidly lately. 4,800 is his salary. He dropped 30 in the last game, over a 25 average in the last five. Definitely okay with using him. The Heat haven't been able to restrict point guards as well lately as what they have earlier in the season. 7,900 for Hassan Whiteside. We know about the Rockets bump. We know that Whiteside can go big. He'd strictly be a tournament-only option for me, but he'd have to come into consideration. And Chris Bosh at 7,600. Again, Rockets bump is a real thing for big men. Bosh has been remarkably consistent. His lowest score in his last five is just 28 points, so that's not a low score. We know that he's going to be a 35 to 40 player. He's probably not a GPP guy because he doesn't have a massively high ceiling, but he's consistent enough for me to look at him in a cash game. Justice Winslow is not a write-off. He's at 4,200, not a big salary. He's averaging over 22 in his last five. He's been consistently around that 22 mark. And at 4,200, it's almost that 5x value. So if you're looking for a way to find some bigger price guys in there, Justice Winslow might be someone to consider. And he's going to get 30 minutes most likely, especially with Tyler Johnson out again. Dwight Howard, 7,800. Hasn't been putting up numbers recently that well. Hasn't been getting many minutes because of ejections. Now, I think that he'd be okay to use because people might look at his recent production, might look at the minutes and go, oh, Dwight's not playing that well. But you know, ejections, that's why. And I called him out for being a massive knob. He is. That's fine. But if he plays 35 minutes at 7,800, 40 points is definitely on the board for Dwight. So he's not completely off the table. James Harden's up to 10,900. That's almost putting him off the table. That's almost at 11,000. Yes, he's been fantastic, but at 10,900 against a Heat team who is restrictive against shooting guards, I'm not really sure that I want to go that way. 6,000 for Trevor Ariza. I'd love it if it wasn't against the Heat. Just not a really good spot for him, even in the way he's been playing, which has been pretty positive lately. He only put up 29 in the last game. He's only averaging 26 in the last three. He's a fluctuating guy. Okay, getting into a tournament because he does have a decent upside, but this is probably not the right matchup for him. Terrence Jones, no thanks. Josh Smith at 4,000, he's strictly a tournament option, I would say. And Clint Capella at 4,400, he can be left for somebody else to have a crack at. The Toronto Raptors and the Phoenix Suns, a couple things in play here. Obviously, it's the Raptors after a terrible loss against the Nuggets coming on a back-to-back after playing in Denver, which is not good. You go to Denver, you play in altitude, you get tired. There's that factor. They are traveling on the road to Phoenix. Another factor. Back-to-back, another factor. They're playing a team who's playing their first game with a new coach. Another factor. You would think everything logically, if you didn't take all those factors into consideration, like you go, the Raptors are going to blow out the Suns. The Suns are shit. We know this. But it's back-to-back, second half of back-to-back, on the road, after playing in altitude, playing a team with a new coach. I'm not saying I think Phoenix is going to win, but what I am saying is that I don't think the blowout factor is going to be as much of a problem as what it could be in any other situation if they were playing. So, what does it do for guys like DeMar DeRozan, Kyle Lowry? I think that you can look, the matchup is beautiful for them. It's fantastic. 8,200 for DeRozan, I'm happy getting him out there. 9,000 for Kyle Lowry after a terrible performance. I'm probably less happy about using him, but I think that he is worth a play. He's not a complete write-off of a guy to use because of all those factors that I mentioned. If James Johnson happens to be out, Corey Joseph's at 3,900, one of the best cheap point guards on the board. At 3,900, he just needs to crack 20 points, which I think he can do against. And if the game's a blowout, he's going to get more minutes And even if it's not, he'll still play 28. So he's in a pretty much a win-win situation, Corey Joseph, at 3,900. Going to be a pretty nice option to build a decent lineup around. Patrick Patterson, Luis Scola, both got great matchups, but both, you can't rely upon them. They're strictly tournament-only options. No trust in them at all. And Terrence Ross at 4,200, the same. I can't rely upon him in a cash game spot either. Jonas Valanciunas at 6,500, that salary just feels too high for me. Not getting enough minutes, not enough production recently either. On the Suns side of things, Archie Goodwin's at 4,800. Not a positive matchup for him going up against Kyle Lowry. Really, his form has tailed off significantly the last few games. Not sure I want to roster him. We don't know what the Suns are going to do with their rotation, so it's really hard in a cash game to like many of them. I don't mind Markieff Morris, though. At 4,800, he's really cheap. He's been, you know, pretty good the last couple of games. A 24-25 point guy. He's got the potential to play more minutes under a new coach. Maybe, maybe not, but there's potential for it. Don't mind using him in a tournament. And Alex Len at 4,600 becomes a very nice tournament option as well. But obviously we need to check during the day, check at shoot around, check the Suns beat reporters, check the starting lineups, all that sort of stuff to see where Len is going to be placed. Because if he's going to be put on the bench, then he's not going to be a pretty nice option, is he? Devin Booker, I don't imagine his minutes change. He's at 5,200. The Raptors do restrict shooting guards pretty well, so I think I'd probably steer clear of him in this one, just with so much uncertainty with how they're going to run things and how they're going to run the rotation. Same with Tyson Chandler, same with PJ Tucker, same with TJ Warren, and Jordy McRae is a very much a home run only GPP option. The Portland Trailblazers and the Milwaukee Bucks. The Blazers are favored by 7.5. The total is 204.5 for this game. John Henson is questionable with his back issue. Looks like he's set to miss a couple more games, really. We're going to have no OJ Mayo in this one either. Jabari Parker is probably the guy that I do like here. There's a lot of positive matchups going around in this one. Jabari Parker's at 5,200. He feels like he's going to be a lock for 25 points most nights. Cash and GPP, I think he's a pretty good option. The Portland front court is a confusing one. It's a great spot for them going up against the Bucks, but who's it going to be? Mason Plumlee at 5,700. I reckon that he's a pretty decent chance. And Al-Farouq Aminu's been getting consistent run as well lately. He's at 5,100. I'd feel relatively confident with using Aminu in a cash game. You're not going to get his ceiling's not massively high, but I think that he's going to be pretty reliable. Well, he has been pretty reliable of late. Alan Crabb has got a nice matchup as well, like so many of the people do in this match, but he's a GPP only sort of player. CJ McCollum, he's at 7,300. Hasn't been achieving that sort of level at all recently. I reckon I'll steer clear of him. Michael Carter-Williams is at 6,200. I don't mind that sort of salary. Yes, he put up a big game in the last one. He is not a terrible cash game option. He's not the greatest, though. Giannis Antetokounmpo, 7,500, and Greg Monroe at 79. Matchups, the matchup doesn't favor Monroe at the moment. The Blazers have been restricting the centers pretty well. Antetokounmpo, 7,500, it's expensive. He needs to get you to 37 points, and I'm just not sure he's going to really approach that. I think he's more of a 30, 31, 29 sort of guy, and I'm not really sure that's the right one to use there. Damian Lillard, not a good matchup for him. He's only a tournament option at 8,800. He could go big. He's got pretty big ceiling, but lately he's been not as big a ceiling sort of player, as little sense as that makes. His highest score in his last five is 45. His lowest score is 33, but he's been closer to that 35 range, and at 8,800, you need him to be 43, 44, and that's just not where he's been. That's where he's been topping out. He's been topping out at 5x value, which is not a great option for cash or for tournament, and the matchup doesn't really suit him all that well. Chris Middleton, who was red hot, has cooled off significantly lately, so he's not someone that is a must roster player, but he definitely comes into consideration. I'll say that much. That's about it for that one. The last game of the night. Whew. The Minnesota Timberwolves and the Los Angeles Lakers. The Timberwolves are favored by 4.5. The total is 202.5. This is the Lakers. They are not very good. That's fair to say. Injury-wise, Larry Nance has been shut down until after the All-Star break. Kevin Martin, Kevin Garnett, Nikola Pekovic are all doubtful. What a shock. Massive shock. Pekovic has got a sore ankle. I'm sure you have all fallen off your chairs with absolute astonishment that Petkovic is doubtful with a sore ankle. And I'm sure you're shocked that Kevin Martin and Kevin Garnett are injured as well. Fine, good, get them out. We don't need them playing to develop these young players. There's just going to be a stack of fantasy value in this game. Gorgui Dieng, 5,500. Let's hope he gets 37 minutes again. Love him as a mid-price center. Zach LaVine, 4,700. Hopefully Sam Mitchell gives him 30 minutes instead of the bullshit 25 he gave him the last one. 30 minutes for Zach LaVine, yes please. And remember, it's against the Lakers. Andrew Wiggins, 6,300. Now, Andrew Wiggins, this looks beautiful. You can't get a better matchup than what this is for Wiggins against the Lakers wings. Wiggins has played the Lakers twice this season, and he has been pitiful in both of those games. Putrid. I'm still getting on him here and thinking he can turn around, but he has not played well against the Lakers whatsoever. He has been like under 3x value, I think, in both of them. Really, I think one he had 7 fantasy points, and the other he had 20. Like, not big numbers from Andrew Wiggins at all. This matchup, and maybe I'm just getting blinded by the Lakers portion of it, but his history against them has been absolutely reprehensible. Julius Randle, 6,100. I like his chances here to get 30 points, despite being against the Wolves, who have been reducing the production from power forwards. It makes me a little bit off him, but I still think that he's a pretty good play. Not many other Lakers guys get me too excited. D'Angelo Russell. The Byron Scott D'Angelo Russell comedy show continues, and if it wasn't messing with a franchise and a guy's career, I'd probably laugh a little bit more, but Byron Scott is the largest dickhead in the NBA. He has got no concept. I tweeted out a quote from him today saying that he doesn't want to put D'Angelo Russell in at crunch time in case he goes out there and has lots of turnovers and then gets ridiculed. And I wish I could remember who it was that said it, but the person that I retweeted said something along the lines of, dude, all of the ridicule comes from you. Like, the only person that's ridiculing D'Angelo Russell is Byron Scott. What are you protecting him from? If you're protecting him from ridicule, don't go out and bag the shit out of him every time you have a press conference. He's a character. And that's not a positive term. He is a written character by a Hollywood script writer who is writing this for shits and giggles, for whatever. And I don't want to hear this, you know, that he's there to be the tank commander and forcing them to, so they keep their pick. He's not only making them keep their pick, but he's potentially ruining, you know, the potential franchise players on this team. You can't tell me that having these guys play and learn would make them win so many games that they're going to lose their pick. If what he says is right, these guys don't know what they're doing, they're going to go out there and ruin things, surely that means they keep their pick more likely, rather than putting solid veterans out there like Brandon Bass and Lou Williams. Just let him play. Everything Byron Scott says makes no sense. Anyway, can't get on Russell here. Jordan Clarkson has been underperforming at 5,500, and Lou Williams is definitely not reaching his 57 price tag very often as of late. Karl-Anthony Towns. He's at 8,600. That is a massive salary. But he is averaging almost 47 points in his last 3 games. He put 47 up in the last one. He's basically 47 every single night at the moment. The Lakers aren't going to be able to stop him. Sam Mitchell might be able to stop him. 8,600 makes him almost fade-worthy. But in a cash game, I reckon you have to play him. The only thing I could say is that you've got Gorgui Dieng there, who's a really solid and value play as a center as well, who you could be able to pivot away from Towns from. But it's really hard to steer clear of him, but that salary has risen dramatically. And it's good because his form has put him up to that. The first time that Ricky Rubio played the Lakers this season, he was fantastic. He is definitely on the board at 6,700. He almost had 40 in his last game. He can do it, and he can tear the Lakers a new one pretty comfortably. Tayshaun Prince is at 3,500 if anyone was interested. He's probably going to play 48 minutes in this one and put up about 2 or 3 points. So you definitely have to consider Tayshaun Prince for no lineups. Not many other guys that really need to be paid attention to, I don't think. Maybe Kobe, who was fantastic in the last game. He's at 5,800. He's questionable every single game, it feels like, at the moment with his shoulder. He put up 41 in that game. But it had been a string of games where he hadn't been anywhere near that. Maybe you throw him into a tournament, but that's probably the extent of the Kobe Bryant usage for daily fantasy. All right, let's have a look at the DFS picks of the day. At point guard, Corey Joseph, 3,900, Goran Dragic, 54, and Isaiah Thomas, 7,800. Shooting guards, Zach LaVine, 47, Andy Wiggins, 6,300, and DeMar DeRozan, 82. Small forwards, Luol Deng, 48, Evan Turner, 52, and Carmelo Anthony, 9,000. Power forwards, Markieff Morris, 48, Jabari Parker, 52, and Chris Bosh, 76. And the centers, Robin Lopez, 49, Gorgui Dieng, 5,500, and Karl Anthony Towns, 8,600. Talked about Towns just a minute ago. There is a slight bit of risk there, but it really, if you're spending up for centers, it doesn't get much better than using the big man in Minnesota. Just a quick thing on Karl Anthony Towns. He's the third ranked player over the last 2 weeks in standard leagues. That's how good he's been. Anyway, follow me on Twitter. On the screen, you can see it below, at redrock_beeble. Don't forget to get involved in the Facebook and Instagram contests. I'll put them up each day, guess the player output, and we'll see how we go with those. Interact with the Facebook page. I want to get some more comments happening over there, so that would be great. And don't forget to get your entry in for the 500th NBA jersey, 500th review NBA jersey. Leave a review on iTunes. If you're number 500, you will get the jersey. Pretty simple. Shout out again, Ron, 120932. You won the jersey, review number 400. Contact me if you want it. If not, by the end of the week, someone else is getting it. Number 401 will get that. We are done here, guys. Thank you so much for listening, everyone. See ya.